Once more into the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and...
Jake!
McClure.
It's just not as fun without the music.
No, it's not. And myself and the CD that had the music on it are now separated from one another.
Parted ways.
I don't know where that thing is, and that's weird.
I'll make a new one.
Okay, that's cool. Anyway, we are the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is, coincidentally or not coincidentally, not only a radio program, or as Jake likes to say, a radio tell.
Yes.
But is also an SEC registered, well, an investment advisor registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Not supposed to say SEC registered investment advisor, I don't think. Anyway.
Yeah, you can say it either way.
Okay, just, whatever.
The SEC doesn't give their stamp of approval. That's just who we register with.
That makes sense to me. So, we are here. You are there. Well, I guess
Hopefully. From
your perspective, you could consider yourself here, and we would be there.
But it's obviously not true, because if you were here, we would see you.
That's right. And it's December 27th where we are, and if it's also December 27th of 2014 where you are, the fourth day of Christmas, then you can give us a call in here at 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And you can ask us questions about anything that you want, as long as it has to do with economics, investments, and things of that ilk.
They can ask other questions too. We just won't answer.
Yeah. Well, they can ask the questions, yeah. But if we did answer...
it would probably be wrong.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It has a higher probability of being wrong than if they ask on economics.
Makes sense. So, yeah.
Christmas.
Stocks rise to record highs.
High.
U.S. stocks rise to record highs.
Right.
Dow has gained for 7 consecutive sessions. Do you like that?
Well, I mean, they always have these strange combinations of, you know, number of straight sessions, or it's... I'm glad they don't do this with the weather. It'd be really hard to watch the weather if
This is the 7th consecutive day
without rain
that we have had over 100 degree temperatures. That's
this
a big one.
This is the 9th consecutive minute of rainfall in the last 3 minutes.
During the summertime particularly, the people on the radio, and maybe on the television too, because I don't watch television, so I don't know.
Right.
Say things like, we have had record high temperatures for this date for 7 consecutive days. So I guess it does work with weather, see? This is the heaviest rain we've had since yesterday.
Could be, yeah. Could be.
This is the highest the creek has been since...
The last time the market has acted the way it has is, this is the first time it's happened this way since 2 weeks ago.
Yes, that's...
pretty much in line.
Well, it makes sense.
But it makes good headlines.
It does.
That's the thing. I mean...
I like the article that's in the Wall Street Journal today on this... well, actually, it was yesterday. It says, many investors have come around to seeing low crude prices as a benefit for the U.S. economy and stock market. Duh.
Wait a minute. They say that not having expensive fuel is good?
The market,
wait a minute.
The market dropped this month, earlier this month, because the price of fuel was down.
Mm.
And at the time we were saying, duh, that's really silly. And it took them about 2 weeks to figure out that we were right.
Oh, yeah. It is nice having lower fuel prices.
So we're in another position where... Chris, it was a little announcement this week, too, about the extremely gross domestic...
yeah, that was pretty nice.
The produce, the gross produce in the United States. You know, you go to the produce section and it's really rotten, and so it'd be gross produce of the United States.
Gross.
Yeah, gross.
Gross. Yes, gross domestic product was very nice.
Very nice.
Very nice.
It rose 5%. Well, it actually didn't rise 5%. That is, let me tell you, if it was anyone other than the Commerce Department, that would be considered false advertising.
In the Commerce Department, right. It's just normal.
Right. And what it did is during the third quarter of 2014, a three-month period, the economy grew at a rate that, were it to grow that rate at that same rate for an entire year, would equate to 5%. But it really didn't grow 5%. It only grew 0.25%, actually a little less than 0.25% during that quarter. But they don't – I don't know whether the – actually, on the Commerce Department news releases, it makes that very clear at an annualized rate of 5%.
Right, right. It's just when the media gets a hold of it and says the economy grew at a rate of –
5%.
5%.
Well, this is it's an interesting – in the economy – actually, what they write – I was just looking at several of the articles. Economy grew 5% in third quarter. which makes me think that maybe the reporters don't know what they're writing about.
They don't.
They don't understand.
It's pretty – yeah. I mean, this is something – the first interview I did for a television program as someone in the financial world, they came in and they wanted my opinion on what was going to happen for Y2K. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember.
I do remember.
Not Y2K, but the whole, you were out of town, they came in, and I was young, I mean, pretty new to the business, not overly new, I'd been there for about 9 years.
It was just the other day.
And they came in and they wanted to know what was going to go on with the market. And I said, well, we're probably going to have a big boom for the first couple of months of 2000, and then we're going to have a crash when all that money goes the other direction. And so there's the soundbite was, we're going to have a crash. And they spelled my name Jason.
Mm.
So it wasn't quite just a misspelling. It was
You should thank them because since they misquoted you, they really needed to attribute it to somebody else.
Yeah, I'm glad they attributed it to somebody else because I hadn't said that. But so...
Well, this is an interesting thing.
They kind of say what they want to say, and they think this is going to sell newspapers or this is going to sell subscriptions to our webpage. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is I love reading these articles with memory, which I kind of get the impression that most people who watch the news or who read the news are assumed and they're fulfilling the assumption not to have any functional memories.
What were we talking about? I can't remember.
And the reason I say that, here we go. Oil futures gave back early gains. This is part of the stock market record article.
Okay, all right.
Oil futures gave back early gains to end near five-year lows on Friday. A surprise surge in U.S. crude oil supplies reported Wednesday underscored the severity of a global glut. I love that, a global glut, that has sent U.S. oil prices spiraling 49% lower in the past 6 months.
Okay.
On Friday, oil futures fell 2% to $54.73 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Stock market breaks record levels. Now, remember that 2 weeks ago,
same news,
the fall in oil prices caused the stock market to go down.
There's a key word in there.
What's that?
Surprise.
Global glut.
I like global glut, too, but
I like global glut.
Read the surprise part again.
Okay. A surprise surge in U.S. crude oil supplies.
Okay. Who was surprised by that? You had to live under a rock to be surprised by that.
This is the surprise surge in crude oil supplies mean that there's a lot of oil out there, but there's a lot more oil out there than they thought. But this is the interesting thing. Can you imagine being surprised by a surge in crude oil?
That
would
be messy.
Really uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, that's surprising and messy. I'm glad.
That's sort of what happened with the Exxon Valdez.
Right. It was a surprise crude
surprise
oil surge.
Surge in U.S. crude oil. But at the same time, Russia was reported as having used up 40% of the capital reserves it set aside from its treasury to rescue banks that otherwise would have collapsed in the last week.
Yes.
40% in the last week.
Right. They have a sovereign fund in Russia, and they are eating into their sovereign fund. It's basically like a rainy day fund for Texas, only they've been socking money away in there. They're going through it pretty quick.
And guess what else they're doing?
What's that?
Vigorously.
Drinking vodka.
Well, they may be doing that, but I'm talking about the official Putin. Well, if we could,
they're putting it in their mouth.
You know what a put is.
Uh-huh.
So a Putin.
Uh-huh.
Is buying gold.
Yep.
At record rates.
For them, it's a good idea.
Well, I don't know. The issue is, this is their official position, is we don't trust Western currencies, and any currency that's dominated by the dollar, and that includes the euro, apparently, that's dominated by the United States.
As is the ruble.
Well, that's, they're buying gold because they don't trust currencies.
Okay. Yes, because now, their currency is collapsing.
But this is the fascinating thing to me. They're going broke.
Yeah.
And they're buying gold. Gold has fallen about 40% in price. And the only reason, by the way, that gold rallied 1 or 2% in the last couple of weeks is because guess who's buying gold?
Russia. You just said that.
Somebody else buying gold. ISIS is buying gold.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And North Korea is buying gold.
Uh-huh.
And matter of fact, if you go down the list of people, list of organizations. Now, you get over into China and India, the gold demand is still high in China and India, but nothing like it was, but it's still there. And they also don't trust their own currency. But this is the fascinating thing to me. If you look at who's buying gold, none of them are particularly friendly to the United States.
Well, let me give you a little sideline here. There's a lot of the mortgages in Russia are based in dollars.
Yeah.
So there are homeowners around Moscow that have a mortgage that they must pay in dollars when they're getting paid in rubles. And the price of the ruble has dropped drastically. We're talking about close to 50% at this point against the dollar. Well, they still have to pay their mortgage. This is why, you know, we talked about deflation here in the past. So this is in effect, the dollar is deflating. It's becoming more valuable against the ruble. Mm-hmm. And when someone has their financial livelihood wrapped up in something that's deflating that quickly, they either have to increase their income drastically or they're going to go broke. And that's what's going on there. So for Russia, this is one of those weird moments in time where it may actually be a good idea to buy gold for them or buy dollars. Buying dollars and buying. The reason why I say it may be a good idea is because with the drop in ruble, they've got a 50% return on the gold because gold has barely moved at all.
But this is the point. They're using dollars, their dollar reserves,
right,
to buy gold.
That's dumb. That is dumb.
The only thing about it that's scary, and there is something about it that's scary, is I don't know if you read this today, but Vladimir.
Mm-hmm.
You remember there was another guy named Vladimir, Vlad Tepes.
Yeah, Tepes.
Who's otherwise, he's popularly known as Dracula.
Dracul.
He was also a Russian, by the way.
He was related to the Russians.
Well, he was actually sent there, I understand, by, was it Catherine the Great?
Yeah, I think he'd been there a couple of generations.
So. Oh, anyway, the issue is that he issued their military, official military, he...
Vladimir did, not Dracula.
No, well, yeah, Vladimir. Vlad issued their official military stance, and he said Russia is threatened.
Number one threat to Russia, yes.
That is the destabilization of countries around Russia by outside forces.
Well, he mentioned NATO specifically.
Well,
the buildup of NATO forces along the border is...
That was an interpretation, but at least my reading today was that they very specifically never mentioned the United States or NATO.
Huh.
Which was...
That's not... See, I read Russian, so...
Well, the issue is that it was notable that they didn't mention the United States or NATO. They said simply the buildup of foreign forces and their destabilization of countries that were traditionally in the Russian
sphere of influence
and allies and that had large populations of Russian-speaking people. Now, who is he talking about? And immediately we look, oh, well, it's Ukraine. Well, actually,
it's not just Ukraine.
There are three countries up on the Baltic coast that describes perfectly. And in there, they said the possibility exists they may need to intervene to protect Russian-speaking people, Russian citizens, no less. Apparently, this was something that came out of that really got my attention. Apparently, I'm going to forget the names now. Latvia. What are the three Baltic nations? They're really tiny Baltic nations.
Estonia, Lithuania.
And Lithuania, which always makes me think of a drug. on the Baltic Sea, who are members of NATO.
Yeah.
The thing that occurred to me as I was reading his rambling presentation translated into English was that he sounds an awful lot like he's describing the increased NATO exercises
that are going on
in those three nations. The Canadians have been flying in there. The Germans have been flying in there. We've been flying in there with squadrons.
Latvia and Estonia are right against Russia. They are bordering Russia.
Mm-hmm. And this is the point. The Russian-speaking people in those nations that are a minority, but a significant minority, 30 to 40% of the population in many cases, this is the interesting thing. Almost all of them carry a Russian passport and are Russian citizens.
Correct.
Who live in those nations. So when he describes the possible necessity to intervene to protect Russian citizens, wow. The thing that, if you want something to worry about, and we really need something to worry about at any given moment. If we don't have something to worry about, we get in trouble. Is that if the runs on banks, which is, by the way, where 40% of the money in the Russian ruble defense fund or whatever it was that they have there, when there were actual runs on certain banks, and they had to supply them with lots and lots and lots of rubles because people are pulling their rubles out.
Right.
I don't know what they're going to do with them, but they're pulling them out of the bank because they think the bank's about to fail. Well, the bank was about to fail.
Well, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Yeah. If everybody believes it, then it will.
If, on the other side, there's an 11-day Russian Christmas holiday. I mean, they take Christmas
really seriously.
Much more seriously than
we
do.
They don't do anything for those 11 days.
It has to do with the old 12 days of Christmas
thing.
And they are in like the third or fourth day of that now. On the far side of the 11 days of Christmas, during which time, by the way, the banks are normally closed anyway.
Right.
Unless there's some really good news somewhere, there's a lot of analysts who are suggesting that there may be a run on the Russian banks and a collapse of the Russian, of the ruble at one point before the Russians directly intervened on earlier this week. Was down to 80 to the dollar. Now, they pushed it back up to 57, I think, to the dollar. That is, considering that when the new Russian ruble was issued following the collapse in 1998, the ruble and the dollar were 1-to-1. And it now takes 80 rubles, anywhere from 60 to 80 rubles, to buy a dollar.
We're at 51.
Okay.
51 as of Friday.
Yeah, but that was last week.
Yeah. Well, this week.
It's 53.50, I think, in trading yesterday.
$51.04.
I got some other numbers here. But anyway.
I think it probably depends on who is doing the exchange well.
So the 11-day holiday break. By the way, it is not technically a Christmas break. It's a New Year's break.
Right. Because that goes back to the Soviets where they didn't. Celebrate
but
Christmas.
The concern is that on the far side of the break, if there's a run on the banks and we get a 1998 style collapse, which is distinctly possible at this point because many, many Russian companies are due to make payments at the beginning of January on dollar denominated debts.
Yeah.
And they may not have enough dollars to do it with. There's a pattern emerging here, which I certainly hope doesn't come to pass. I'm certainly not forecasting it, but I hope it doesn't come to pass. Hitler went from being an elected chancellor to a dictator because their economy collapsed because of sanctions against their economy because of World War I.
Yeah.
And his pattern going into the collapse and following the collapse was there are Germans residing in Czechoslovakia, residing in Austria, and they must be rescued. There must be the Germans built up their military and hired a lot of unemployed people in the process to rescue those poor Germans. And he coined it, the terminology that's being used by Putin right now and the terminology that was used by Hitler just before the collapse of the German economy and Hitler's taking over effectively as dictator, Führer specifically, is so similar, right down to the fact that when he was issuing his, he was on television issuing their new defense posture. Now, think about this for a second. We have a quadrillennial defense review in the United States, which the president signs off on.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine prime time, the president reading the quadrillennial defense review finding verbatim? Well, that's what they just did in Russia, and apparently it was a extremely popular show, probably because all of the television stations had to carry it. But the parallels here, right down to the fact that there's a tiny little news article, these little tiny backwater news articles are the ones that fascinate me, reported in Reuters. The Swiss are dismantling their anti-invasion infrastructure.
Yikes. They have one of the most advanced anti-invasion infrastructures in the world,
right. They're
getting rid of it because they don't think that there's any threat anymore.
They have explosives literally built into every bridge, every tunnel.
It's expensive to keep it updated because those explosives go bad over time, and removing them is a little volatile.
And they are removing all of those and filling up the cavities where they were, saying there is no longer any threat of war. man, do I ever hate to see so many parallels in that direction. But that and the European nations, members of NATO, have allowed their military to deteriorate rather profoundly.
Yeah, German military really, really stinky. It's not funded. The people that are doing it are still skilled, but they don't have the funding to go ahead with any kind of large maneuver of any kind.
Large manure?
Yeah, large manure.
We're going to go back to horses.
German manure.
Right.
The Brits are pretty up on it, though. They've actually been expanding. They've got their second large aircraft carrier coming online in a year. They now have three aircraft carriers. One of them would be equivalent to one of our normal aircraft carriers there, and then they have two that are helicopter carriers. And that is more than Russia has. And then there's what we have. But Russia has something else. Russia has nukes.
Well, also Russia has a lot of
big
nukes.
Military.
And they have a really big military, and they have some relatively modern tanks. They probably couldn't stand up very long to an Abrams, but they still, relative the rest of Europe, they're the Russian military is clearly outside of, well, even not even including Great Britain, is still clearly the strongest military in Europe.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The only thing that keeps them from doing more than they're doing is the trying to figure out exactly where is the line that if they cross it, the United States becomes involved.
That's the linchpin of the whole thing.
And it's their assessment of whether or not the president will take action if they cross one of those lines.
And there's another area of threat. We've said something really good. Our economy is growing very quickly.
Our economy is very healthy. And by the way, likely to get more healthy as the year progresses next year.
Then there's the threat from Russia, and it is a real threat.
Right.
It is not an imaginary threat. They are at the cusp of the type of instability that leads to aggression, as if they weren't there already. This is the sort of thing that Putin's in control. In order to maintain his popularity, he needs to be aggressive. The way to be aggressive right now is to annex part of Ukraine again. His popularity spiked when he did that. It's still high, and he's got an outside threat now. The food's not coming in. Now, another thing Russia did recently, I've got another subject that fits into this nicely, but Russia finalized its agreement with Kazakhstan and Belarus. as their free trade agreement just went online. They are now able to trade freely across their countries without tariffs, except that Belarus, the day that the signing took place, complained that it was a farce. The president of Belarus said, "We just signed this free trade agreement, but Russia will not buy food from us." Russia closed off its importing of European and American food because of the tariffs and sanctions that we put against them. So they said, fine, we're not importing food. Well, they stopped importing food from Belarus, too. Belarus is their ally, but Belarus has not stopped importing food from Europe. So Belarus was making a lot of money by importing food from Europe and selling it on to Russia. And Russia said, no. Well, now the president of Belarus said, well, wait a minute. We just signed a free trade agreement, and now you're saying we don't have free trade. So that's a little piece of history to hold in your mind, because later it will be important. Not later today, maybe later this year, maybe later next year. That's an important piece of history that if Belarus is beginning to show signs of lack of loyalty to Russia, Belarus is the closest of close with Russia. Ukraine used to be really close with Russia.
By the way, Belarus means beautiful Russia.
Yes.
Which means that the rest of Russia is ugly.
Right. Belarus is almost entirely made of Russian speakers. It isn't a small minority. It is a vast majority of Belarusians are actual Russians. And if they're upset and saying, wait a minute, there's a problem, and it's one that's going to be rearing its head later, there's no doubt in my mind that the day of the signing of this momentous thing, the president of Belarus basically gave some smack talk to Putin. Putin doesn't like smack talk. And this is their closest ally. So just hold that. Now, on top of all of this, we have the ongoing hack attacks against Sony, ongoing hack attacks now against Microsoft.
Well, and we also have commercials to play.
Yeah, and we'll come back to that.
So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Telephone numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we'll be back after these important words from Town Square sponsors. And we're back, and guess who found his CD? Welcome back to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Today is not the day the music died.
No, I just stuck it in the wrong pocket.
Slept for a while.
Thing there, yeah, anyway. So you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Again, the telephone numbers if you'd like to call in and discuss anything financial. I'm going to make a prediction about a prediction here in just a minute.
You're
going to
predict a prediction?
I'm going to do like Stephen Hawking did when he said, I predict that I was wrong. No, I predict that I was incorrect.
Okay, there you go.
That like that. I really, I don't know if you've
seen
that
yet.
Do
you have an estimated time of arrival of your estimated time of arrival? Because if you have an ETA of your ETA of the prediction of a prediction, that would be...
Moment. Right. It's the answer to all of that is momentarily.
Okay. Here we go. I'm ready.
Let me tell you the telephone numbers again: 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I predict that Jacob was right.
Oh dear. You predict that I was right.
That you are right.
That I am right.
But I predict that your prediction—that's the prediction about the prediction—was correct.
So you're predicting my prediction.
Have I given it yet? Correct. Yes, you have.
Oh, so you're not
That's
really.
Why it's in the past tense.
You predicted my prediction.
No, I haven't predicted your prediction. I'm predicting that your prediction was correct when you predicted that we are going to have a record retail sales level for this holiday, and it's going to be higher than was anticipated by the economists.
Yes.
The echo. Terrorists, otherwise known.
Economologists.
Yes.
Yes.
People who are beaver bombing Europe right now. That's totally a rabbit trail of no significance.
No idea what that is.
Beaver bombing Which reminds me, I want to bring something up. Can I bring something completely off the wall up here?
I still don't know what that is, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I want to bring something. Remember that Jacob predicted that we're going to have not only a record holiday sales season, but one that is more record-y than previously was recorded.
And you can see this if you go by any music store that still sells vinyls. You will see record sales.
You can see it anywhere.
There are record sales happening everywhere in there.
I was in Best Buy yesterday, and it was a mob scene. And I asked some of the sales. They were tremendously understaffed there. They had two cash registers working out of 10, thinking nobody would be there today. And there were long lines of people loaded up with stuff that they were buying. And I asked if his assistant manager running around looking very harried and harassed. I asked the assistant manager, why do you there's so many people in here today? And he says, well, normally we get a lot of returns today, but I think maybe we were wrong. So at any rate, beaver bombing. You know, one of the big things that we do here in Central Texas and in other places is recycle, right? We're vigorously recycling paper and cardboard.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we think that's really cool and very important, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I was reading that ecology groups are beaver bombing across Europe. There's something called the Euro-Asian beaver, which is also called the castor beaver, which is a very large animal.
Right.
Okay. The
right.
size of a small pig.
Yeah.
And they are, you're not supposed to introduce wild animals into Europe without approval from the European Union and all yeah. kinds of, so they don't do that. They just go in and sneak these beavers in, mating pairs of beavers, mm-hmm. and drop them near streams where they're not right next to a town or something.
Right, that's a good idea. It's great for the ecology.
Well, what yeah. they're doing, and the reason that they want to do this is because the beavers are cutting down trees. They build their dams out of trees, obviously.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
They build huge lodges, and they spend most of the summer cutting down smaller trees to bury in the bottom of the pond so they can eat the bark during the wintertime.
Right.
Okay. And the ecologically sound thing about this is this, quote, sequesters carbon because these fast-growing trees suck carbon dioxide out of the air, convert it into wood, release oxygen.
Uh-huh.
And by burying the wood in the bottom of these things that gradually fill up with silt, you have sequestered carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
Well, that's a silly reason for putting beavers. There's a lot of good reasons beavers.
That's their primary reason. And, of course, the landowners don't particularly care for it because it floods their land. But since the beavers are a protected species, they can't kill them.
You know what's going on in California. The ranchers are requesting beavers.
Right, right.
Because
I got that.
That's the only water that the cattle mm-hmm. still has to drink. All yeah. of the man-made ponds went dry. The beaver ponds are staying wet.
Well, this is an interesting thing relative to us. This is why I want to bring this up. I was taking a mass of boxes that had been delivered that I had very carefully cut up with my box cutting knife,
mm-hmm.
which I purchased for that purpose.
You actually have a knife?
I have a
for
box cutter.
Cutting boxes.
A box cutter, one of the famous box cutters.
Wow.
Yes. I can't take it on an airplane, but I've got
no,
it.
No.
And taking it out to put it in the recycle container, and it was filling up the recycle container with all these boxes, most of which said Amazon on them.
Mm-hmm.
And it suddenly struck me.
You should probably wear pads if the trash can is striking you.
Well, this struck me in the brain, so
oh,
the pads
ow.
Wouldn't help.
Okay.
We are very carefully not sequestering carbon by recycling cardboard. If we just put it in the other container, which is the trash container, it will get buried in a landfill, which reduces the amount of carbon dioxide, because they're made of basically carbon from carbon dioxide
right.
paper, and encourages the growth of new young trees on tree farms all over so they can make more cardboard and more paper.
Uh-huh.
Why are we, the big deal about finding very expensive ways to sequester carbon dioxide out of the air, but we're ecologically aware people are busily recycling carbon dioxide back into the system.
I'm doing something different.
So it suddenly occurred to me that it is far more ecologically sound to put all that cardboard in the regular garbage can and let it get buried.
Got a better solution
than
that.
But there's just the irrationality of the fact that we're busy trying to reduce carbon dioxide use and encourage the growth of plants to suck carbon dioxide out of the air while we're busily recycling paper and cardboard, which reduces the growth of plants and puts carbon dioxide back into the system.
I've got a solution for you.
What's that?
I use mushrooms.
For your boxes?
I should just stop there and everybody go, whoa. And I thought it was weird.
The cool dude uses mushrooms.
Oyster mushrooms.
Right.
I shred up boxes and paper. And then,
feed them to oyster mushrooms.
And then boil it and then drop oyster mushroom spawn in there and put it in bags. And then the paper gets converted into
spore.
Dirt.
Is it spores or spawn?
Both.
Oh, okay.
It's spawn, spore.
Okay.
It converts the paper into dirt and is edible, not the dirt, the mushroom. And then it makes good compost.
Well, it's edible.
Afterwards.
It's probably edible for worms. And
it is.
Plants
you get
such,
some
yeah.
earthworms involved and you get
yeah,
a really viable.
You live food. In Austin and that's cool.
It's a weird place to live. Well, I don't know of anybody else in Austin doing it. I just think it's a pretty good idea.
Well,
and you
just,
get to eat your trash. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, I'm going to think about that. And most of the mushrooms are good, actually. Do they actually have oysters?
Not the shelled creature, not the mollusks.
Oh.
But they have they're oyster-shaped, which
oh.
is why they're called.
I thought maybe you ate them with oysters or
no,
something.
You could. Yeah, I suppose you could.
Well, the point is that I think a lot of times when the ecological movement is less than rational.
Yes. Yes. I think you could say that about any strong cause. Most strong causes are not rational.
And almost anything with echo on the front of it soon becomes irrational, which
yeah.
is why we get back to the Christmas sales.
And economists, yes. They're a little unrational as well.
I read a tremendous number of articles about the danger of the falling price of oil.
What is dangerous about it? I suppose if you are actively drilling for oil right now, spending lots of money to get oil out of the ground, that's dangerous. For the rest of us, it's pretty nice.
Well, the thought was that as our recovery has sort of picked up speed last year,
uh-huh.
a big element in that was the equipment sales, the durable goods purchases,
uh-huh.
that are in business investment in items like made by Caterpillar and things like that.
Right.
Which were being used for the purpose of drilling holes in the ground and blowing shale rock apart
uh-huh.
so that we could get oil out.
Right.
And they said if the price of oil drops, then that thing that has been pursued, that has been helping the economy last 2 years, will go away.
Well, this is one of the wonderful things about our economy. The drop in oil prices causes other money to be available for investment in other things besides shale oil.
But this is where it gets even more interesting to me. Spending, now this is with the 5% increase in GDP.
Right.
Commerce Department said spending on business fixed investment.
Yeah.
Okay, that's stuff that's not broken.
Right. If it ain't fixed, don't broke it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which
Wait
is
a minute. Fixed
investment is things like is equipment. That's really what it is equipment.
Uh-huh.
Rose 7.7% on an annualized basis again in the fourth quarter. That's high. So here are all the economists saying.
All of them.
Well, many economists were saying that the we could go into a recession because the price of oil went down because people would stop doing business would stop doing fixed investment.
I think it wasn't really all or even lots of them. I think it was just loud ones. The loud economists that were saying that they're the economists that claim that there's a depression coming any moment. And here's another example of why we're going to have a depression.
And consumer spending was revised to an annualized growth of 3.2% from 2.2%. I mean, you start down. They had said that spending on structures such as plants and office buildings was 1.1% annualized growth, which everybody was wringing their hands over after the first report came out. They revised that up to 4.8%.
That's much more healthy.
Spending on equipment was raised to 11% from 10.7%. That's not a big deal, but still tremendous. Probably the important thing to see here is not only was the GDP revised upward from 3.9% to 5%, and again, as I said earlier, that is an annualized rate. It's one quarter's worth. In other words, if you did that with stocks or mutual funds or something, you'd go to jail. If you said you took one quarter's rate and multiplied it times four and said, this fund is growing at this percent. But
no.
But the Commerce Department can do it quite legally. But the growth not only is there, was there, but a lot of that growth was focused on things that will create more growth in the future.
Yeah. See, I have a little thing to bring up.
You have
that,
a thing?
Yes, a little thing to bring up here. You predicted that my prediction was going to be right.
I predicted your prediction would be predicted to be predictable.
Right.
Yes.
But it's already going on, so it really makes your prediction an easy one.
Yes.
You can look around and say, yep, you were right. You're right again. And the numbers are going to come out and say you're right.
It has not officially been announced yet, though.
That is true. It is true. And the idea that all the people that were saying we were going to have a lower turnout than expected, and then lowering their expectations even further, which if you think about lower than expected and then lowering expectations, mm-hmm. then
low expectations.
Yes. I was going, wait, that just doesn't make sense. The numbers that I watch as far as consumer credit goes, that's credit card debt that is out there, that's really low. It's been going down consistently for a number of years. Very little jump upward in that. We're seeing incomes go up. We're seeing incomes go up at a faster rate than they have since the Great Recession. We're seeing savings rates at very high. It just seemed pretty easy for me to say we're going to have a really nice Christmas season.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that came out in that report, and we need to break for commercials again, but there's another thing that came out in the report. Annualized inflation, 1.2%.
That's still below the target.
Way below. It's dropping.
Right.
And this is the funny thing is, annualized inflation for the last 31 quarters has not only come in below expectation, it has come in steadily lower each quarter. Very slowly declining inflation. And for those of you who have any memory of any significance, I would like you to think back.
That's not me. I've got to step out of the room for this.
About 4 or 5 years to the shrieks and cries on the internet, on the radio, and on television that we were going to have massive runaway inflation because of quantitative easing.
Yeah.
So now there's papers out, including one of them by Lacker, who is a... Dr. Lacker, who is a ex-member of the Federal Reserve, stating that the policy of quantitative easing actually increased deflation.
Yeah.
We got to do some more commercials anyway. You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you'd like to give us a call on the other side of these important words, you're certainly welcome to do so. If this is Saturday, December 27th, then you can call 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. I will talk about Dr. Lacker's paper after the break, if you would like.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
all right.
We'll be back.
All right.
If you're looking...
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this December 27th, the fourth day of Christmas of the year of our Lord 2014, which sounds astonishingly to me like something out of a science fiction novel.
We're almost done with this particular phase of the science fiction novel.
But we have a caller on 773-1400.
Yeah, let's talk to the caller.
Caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Coming up on your next station break. Are you talking about inflation and the COLA, stuff like that, just on the last segment?
Mm-hmm.
I understand they've taken food and energy out of the, figuring the cost of living and whatnot. I just want to make a comment in reference to that. This morning, I stopped at McDonald's, got a bacon, egg, and cheese biscuit. That's a biscuit with bacon, egg, and cheese. $3.50.
Mm-hmm. So that's included.
Food and energy not figured into the cost of living deal. How does that affect the inflation?
Well, now that one, the McDonald's prices are figured in. The raw cost, in other words, food at the grocery store, by the way, that is considered part of the consumer price index.
Yeah.
The food and fuel. When the Federal Reserve looks at inflation for the purpose of trying to control it over the long term, they don't include food or fuel. It's called the GDP deflator that they use. And the reason is, if we included food and fuel in the equation right now, we would have had deflation over the last quarter.
Yeah, with the cost of oil dropping. So yeah. If you think about for a second, if you think of raspberries, Raspberries have a season. When you get raspberries out of season, they're expensive. If you've put raspberries in the inflation, then we would see these spikes of inflation and then these drops of deflations.
No. What about corn and tomatoes? That's summer stuff. You don't get that during the winter. That's off-season, too.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's correct.
There's always something that's going to be out of season. Well,
correct.
It all balances out.
Right. That's why it doesn't, because there's not a lot that grows in winter.
So nobody eats during the winter as much as they eat during the summer?
What we see is tremendous fluctuations from quarter to quarter in the price of food and fuel.
If you look at the price of milk, or you look at the price of corn, or you look at the price of raspberries, it doesn't really matter if it's the commodity. What you see is things tend to be more expensive in the winter because we have to bring them from further away,
right,
and less expensive in the summer. It's not something that is – this isn't rocket surgery. You can look at that.
No, just the gist of my call was that what does it do to figure inflation if you're going to take certain items of it, like food and energy, out of the part of the equation and whatnot? Inflation doesn't make much difference. You don't not count stuff that's just going through the roof like the price of a biscuit.
Well, this is the point. It is included in the consumer price index.
The McDonald's food.
It sure don't reflect on your Social Security increase and COLA increase and working man's COLA increase.
What they do is they look at the entire economy across the board from one end to the other, and it's really hard. And I think the Commerce Department does a good job, by the way, of trying to get it right. But it's really, really hard to come up with. Matter of fact, there are six consumer price indices because they're trying to balance it out and get it right.
And they're still not getting it right.
But it is really hard to nail that down so that it will affect one person and another person exactly the same way.
You're exactly right, caller. You're talking about something that we've talked about for a long time. If you're on a fixed income, then the numbers that are quoted for inflation are not things that you see in your life.
Right.
Because
that also goes for people that have reached the top of their pay scale, and the only pay raise they get is just the COLA increase.
Well,
so not just the retirees. You know, it affects some working people, too.
Well, there's a lot of people don't get a COLA increase. My employees don't.
I'm saying those that do is getting, next to nothing, maybe a postage stamp or something.
Very frankly, I'm just going to tell you something as a bit of a libertarian. I think COLA increases in wages are just as wrong as anything can be.
I agree.
Because it's a supply and demand issue. If I have somebody working for me and I'm paying them enough that they stay and enjoy working for me, I'm paying them plenty.
But what if the stuff they spend that money on, like food and gas, goes up?
Then
they've got to get another job to pay for that extra.
If they're getting another job and we want to keep them, then we need to raise their pay.
Yeah, and that's the point. But we don't raise it because some governmental entity in Washington, D.C. said inflation is this or that. We raise it because these people need a decent standard of living. We want to keep them because they're highly skilled, and so we pay them actually more than the average, and we got to go.
Thanks
for call. Good call.
Yeah. End of the hour.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And our telephone number in our office, which has a voicemail, of course, on the weekend, but is real people during the week, is 947-1111. If you'd like to talk to us off the air, leave a message for us.
It's also toll-free, 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. You can listen to podcasts there of this program if you didn't get your fill of insanity. You can also email us directly on there on the Contact Us page, or you can go to send us an email directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And that's actually where we get a lot of the information that we use on the radio program is from questions that we receive out there.
But you're lacking in lacquer this week.
I'll do that.
Next hour we'll get that in. And until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM AM Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.